Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight, we are on episode 246, and the topic for tonight is, how do we go about sizing a shelter for the task at hand? And this was kind of your idea there, Ben. I'm going to give you full credit on this one, of course. So why don't you give us a rundown of your thought process on this one?
Yeah, okay. Let's start off with one of the things that was just going through my head is, you know, as Christmas comes up and people are thinking of stuff, maybe somebody's thinking that somebody would want a tent or a shelter or something, and what size do they need, or what one should I get for them? Because I think a common thing is you go online and you see it and says, oh, it's a two-person tent or it's a three-person tent. That should be big enough. And you really have to think about what you're doing, because if you get a one-person tent, me and you both know that oftentimes a one-person tent does not fit us.
No. And I was just about to say, the reason I was snickering was a three-person tent comfortably fits two people. You know what I mean?
I generally try to, if when I'm looking at the person tent, one of the things I look at is my gear takes up about one person. And if you have two people, your gear will still take up about one person. So you can get two people plus their gear in a three-person tent. But about after that, that number can sort of sits kind of consistently. Like, if you had a six-person tent, it's four people plus gear, right?
Yeah, tents are weird. In my experience of tents, and don't get me wrong, I've only owned four or five in my lifetime. The people rating, you can almost throw out the window. You got to look at ground space. Look at dimensions is what I start doing.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, is you really have to look at what kind of trip you're going to be doing and what you expect to do in the tent. Because if you're planning on getting changed in a tent and it's only got like 2 feet of roof space, and some of them are that low. Some people say, oh, tents aren't that small. But yeah, some of them are. Not, you know, if you think you're going to get changed in that, that's an awkward thing, because you're doing it on your back. It's more awkward. So, you know, do you have enough room to sit up and read if you're going to spend a night in it? Is there enough? Like, that was a thing that one of my friends, when we were talking about a tent a little while ago, and he said, I got this tent, it's a great tent, but, you know, at night when I'm getting up to get changed or put my shirt on or read a book, I can't. My head's pushed against the ceiling, and they want it to get a different one. So they were looking for one with more, that was dome shaped, but a little bit higher. The angle of your walls make a huge difference on how much usable space you have in, and whether there's pullouts, and whether you've used the pullouts correctly will affect the usable space within a tent too, right?
Oh, 100%. Even simple things like windows and doors. You know what I mean? We'll talk about conserving heat later, or I assume we will, but having a window or a door that you can open and get some screen at least gives the illusion of a little bit more tent, a little more room inside, you know what I mean? Gives a little less claustrophobic, which is another real consideration when it comes to shelter. The individual getting inside it, how comfortable are they in smaller or larger spaces?
Yeah. So one of the things you really want to take into account when you're sizing your tent is sit down and look at your own physical self. How tall are you? Because there are tents that are only 5.5 foot in any one dimension. And I've got a couple of those small tents. They're very small tents. They're very quick and easy and lightweight. But the reality is I can't stretch out in one. By the time I lay my mattress down, I'm already curled up on the ends and I can't get comfortable in that. So that's not a great choice for me on a trip, but sometimes it's the one I'll end up taking because I know I need to go ultra light, ultra small. So I know I'm going to be sleeping with my legs curled up. It's not going to be quite as comfortable. And so therefore it's not a favorite tent, but it is in my
arsenal of tents.
Arsenal of tents. And that's a good word for arsenal. So, yeah, I really want to talk about that. I mean, tent isn't the only option. People say, oh, well, you know, I want to use a tarp shelter. Perfectly good. You know, I love a good tarp. But it's the same deal. You really want to think about the shelter you're going to build and the size of the tarp you have. And does it have enough room for you to lay down? Are you planning on eating inside this space? And I mean, that's something that you really have to think about. Depending on wildlife and stuff in the area, you may definitely not want to consider that. But sometimes it's hard to avoid that. So if you're planning on doing more stuff in that tent or tarp, you're going to want a bit of extra room, you know? And you want to consider that.
Yeah, no. I think that's a great first thing for considerations is, what are you going to be doing with the shelter and what are you going to be doing inside the shelter? Just like you said from the start. And, yeah. I mean, that can change drastically. So if you're looking for a magic solution for all fixes, I think we've said it before with almost anything related to bushcraft, there is no one guaranteed fix. There's going to be one that does everything okay, but not well, or you can get individual things that do its individual thing well. But very rarely do you find one thing that does multiple instances well. Or at least that's been my experience. So I guess right off the hop, that's one thing I want to throw out there for people is there's probably no perfect shelter for everything. But you may find one that's good enough for everything, if that makes sense.
If you're choosing, you're going to do a big through hike. And your plan is to walk all day, set the tent up, and sleep in it, and then pack the tent up and keep walking. And you're not planning on spending any time in that tent except to sleep. Then you may want to go with the smallest one you can get away with. But keep in mind, what are you going to do with your gear? Is your gear small enough that you can slide it in with you? Is there a vestibule you can keep it in? Are you going to hang it on a tree outside? How are you going to keep it dry? How are you going to protect it from animals and wildlife? You have to consider these things when you're going with your tent. I prefer to keep the gear that I'm comfortable keeping inside with me in case I need any of it. So I often sleep with my backpack and stuff in with me. So I want that extra room. I want to have that bit of storage room. The one exception is often food. I'll take food and put it in a dry bag or something, and I'll hang it outside. I don't necessarily carry a proper bear bag or whatever, but yeah. I'll carry some way to support my food outside because I don't want to attract an animal to my tent. And like I said, cooking in a tent is an iffy proposition, but I have been in situations where I've done it, especially in my hot tent. I have often cooked in my hot tent because the stove is heating the tent as well as providing me with the
power, the ability to cook.
Yeah.
No worries. And that's another important thing too, when bringing a shelter into the mind of this is heat, either conservation or distribution.
Yeah.
But like I said, I assume we'll catch that later. So I won't dive down that rabbit hole just yet.
But we are going to get into ventilation too, right? So that plays in that factor. So yeah, the things you want to keep in mind from the very beginning is, what am I going to do in my tent? How many people am I expecting in my tent? So if you're camping with a few people, are you all in the same tent? If you're camping with a few people and you plan on, like, lack a better word, but entertaining in the tent. So if everyone has a one-man tent and you're on a ring and it's raining and pouring and you don't have any other way to get out of the shelter, then it gets kind of boring. But if you got a slightly bigger tent and two or three people can get in and huddle, you can play a game of cards, you can have a conversation, and you don't feel like you're completely alone. Similar thing with your hammock, right? Hammocks are, in my opinion, a single person's setup.
Yeah, because even when you get the double helmet hammocks or two-person hammocks, have you ever put two people in a hammock? It's not very comfortable.
I've tried it. I wouldn't do it. Like, I wouldn't sleep with two people in a regular hammock. There are a couple of exceptions that you can get away with. But yeah, for the most part, you're just going to be pressed to each other. It's not super comfortable. And I think that really needs to be considered.
Yeah, so what are you going to do in your shelter? Where are you going to be using your shelter? This is another thing too. The individual or yourself that's looking for this shelter, where do you camp more often? Like, if you do a lot of campground camping or drive-up camping, Hollywood camping, whatever you want to call it, you can look for something that's maybe a little bit more extravagant. You're not going to have to deal with the weight and the hauling and stuff like that. But like you said, Ben, if you're going to be doing long distancing or something like that, you may look for something that's a little smaller, lighter, tarp, you know, something like that, single-person tent. There's lots of options there. And
I mean, I have a 10 by 20 or somewhere along that lines car camping tent that I used last year. It was great, but it was exactly what you talked about. You could drive up to it. I could slide it at the back. I'm not dragging this thing any distance. And the plan was to spend up with the whole family in there. There's a dividing wall and we were going to sit inside. We were going to play cards. We were going to talk. We were going to read books. We were going to do stuff in the tent. So yeah, sometimes a big tent is required for sure.
Yeah, so I think we talked about the size of the tent for sure, and I guess that's the entire topic is how do you decide the size. Any good tips on keeping moisture out of a tent? Danny asks. Okay, so yep. That brings up another valid point would be ventilation, and we already kind of hinted towards that. And depending on the style of tent you have and the weather conditions you're in, there's always going to be a certain level of moisture if it's humid out. You know what I mean? Like, the key to getting moisture out is good ventilation, but getting moisture out also lets cold in. And you can basically only ever balance the point to the relative humidity outside. You know what I mean? Yeah. So depending what the relative humidity is outside, you are never going to be lower than that unless you are introducing some sort of artificial heat or something to dry out that shelter.
Yeah. So the point exactly there is if the air outside your tent is colder than the air inside your tent and the humidity of the air is similar, which it would be, then the warmer air will condense against that colder surface that the tent. And the best way to prevent that, like we said, is good ventilation. And so in summer tents, if you look at them, they're mostly screened. And then there's a dome that goes over the top of them that doesn't quite get to the ground, which allows air to travel up around. And there's a buffer between the screen and the outer layer that should stay relatively somewhere in between the outside temperature and the temperature inside of the screened area, and that usually minimizes the condensation. If you can get a steady airflow traveling over that, it'll pick up the moisture as fast as it collects. That is the scientific answer. The reality is you have to make sure that airflow exists.
Exactly. And like I said, when you introduce airflow, it's kind of a catch-22. Yes, it's taking moisture out, but it's generally taking your heat and stuff out too. A lot of people try to snug up their rain flies and stuff. So one, they're not getting the breeze inside their tent because they feel a little warmer, but it also traps all that humidity inside with them. And this is how you're getting a lot of that condensation that's happening on your tents. And then it rolls down. And of course, people start poking at it, ruining the waterproof protection on there. And it starts dripping, stuff like that. And it can be an absolute nightmare. But yeah, the Ben giving the scientific method, that is the best answer. Are canvas tents any better? Depends. Is it treated canvas or not? Canvas itself can breathe, but if it's treated canvas for waterproofing, then it doesn't breathe that good anyway. You know what I mean? And the other side of this is the size of the tent, or any shelter is also going to affect that as well. Canvas tents typically being slightly larger. Usually they're a larger style tent because you're going to get into hot tents, you're getting into multi-person tents and stuff like that. They'll give the illusion that there's less humidity in there, but only because they are a little larger, they're a little taller, that heat is going up, your moisture is generally staying above your headline, and there's just more room for it to re-evaporate before it starts running back down in. Now your common little like Canadian Tire tent, three-person tent, much like I have, one of my small tents. You get two people inside of that. I mean, I can sit in the middle of it by myself without my head touching. Can't stand up, but you know, this is the common tent that most people have. The reality is it's not a big area to spread out all the moisture that's going to be coming off your body. Like, just breathing out releases so much moisture. It's kind of startling when you actually look at the amount of it. It's like a liter of water a day we breathe out or something crazy like that. I think that might be during the summer. But anyway, it is a lot of humidity. And if it has nowhere to go, you're basically forming like a small ecosystem inside there, and it's going to recondense and fall as precipitation in one way or another. Generally, it's going to collect on the sides and then run back down. It's not often you're going to get a cloud in there, but you know what? Depending on the situation, you can get steam or fog inside a tent and not be as much outside because the relative humidity inside is more than outside. Anyway, long science lesson short. Ventilation is your friend.
Yeah. A few things. I seen a tent the other day that I was actually impressed with, and I would really like to test out. And it had an insulated walls. And so what it looked like was like a down blanket. Like, I wonder if it isn't down in it. And that layer would mean that from the inside and the outside, there might be enough insulation you won't get the condensation because it won't be that much colder. That it might actually heat up inside, may be that insulation might prevent that condensation. So that's an idea. Some canvas, if it's not too waterproof, will actually just absorb that moisture. The problem is, if it's not too waterproof and it's raining, then it's going to soak through. So there's the thing. If it can breathe, the same thing we've always said with rain jackets. If it can breathe, you won't die of sweat inside, but then you most likely isn't going to be truly waterproof, so heavy rain will come through. If it's waterproof, you're going to condensate inside, you're going to get wet from your own sweat, right?
Yeah.
And the condensation inside is not just your breathing. It's also some of the sweat that's been evaporating off your body and other things that it comes off of, right? So these are all things to definitely keep in mind. Things that keep it down as much as you can, leave the doors open. Even if you have to, in the summer, you'll screen it. But, you know, a tent isn't really designed to keep you warm. No one has ever claimed that, I don't think. A tent is designed to keep the wind and the rain off of you. So it creates a microclimate that has less wind and less rain.
Generally, yes. The only exception there, of course, being hot tents, and then you're getting into the canvas and stuff like that. But then it's not really the tent keeping you warm. It's the stove inside. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's definitely the stove inside. And you know that because it's not an insulated wall, a lot of that heat is radiating outside of it. It's not an efficient system, but it works. And because it's small enough, you don't have to produce a ton of heat to make a difference. That it is a reasonable solution in the winter to heat that, you know, 100 square feet isn't that much. So you can get through the night with, you know, surprisingly little wood and still stay pretty warm. But if you tried to heat, say, a 10 by 10 by 10 room, that would be a lot more. That'd be much more heat, right?
So one last comment here before we, you know, finish up this rabbit hole, because we're kind of on topic, slightly to the side of the topic. But
yeah.
Nomad, I've had more issues with rain running on the ground than rain falling on the top of my tent. And I assume what you mean is water running in from the bottom. And this is the thing with all shelters. So it's going to fit in here to some degree. You do need to either find natural or make some artificial drainage around any kind of a shelter site.
Yeah. We've talked about this before, that where you put your tent is extremely important. And, you know, if you set your tent up on relatively flat ground, and it's tempting, you go to a park and they have a tent pad, it's flat. Right? So then you put your tent up and you got your rain fly and all that around it, and the rain hits and it goes down and hits that ground, where is it going to go? It's going to go equally inward as well as outward. And some of that's going to sort of come in underneath. So you're, unless it's drained, like well-drained soil, then the soil gets wet. This is why we use like ground tarps. Like, and a ground tarp should not extend past your tent. If it does, water hits it and then comes in.
Runs right back underneath. So if your ground tarp is a little bigger than your tent, fold those edges under and not like fold them in like this. Fold them under like this is the best thing that I found, and place them back under. That way it's less chance, once again, for water to collect and get underneath your tent.
A good tent should have a bit of a bathtub floor, so it should be able to handle, you know, a half inch or so of water, and it shouldn't come up through. But, you know, that waterproofing is somewhat limited. Ideally, you set up on a slightly mound piece of ground so that all the water that comes off your tent then immediately sheds even further away. We've always said make sure you're higher than the area that most likely will flood. So don't put yourself in a hollow, because that is going to flood. And on top of a hill isn't perfect, because you're going to deal with more wind. And if you're going to be on the side of a hill, which is possible, try to make sure that any natural drainage is going to be to the left or right of you when you're looking up the hill. And you can tell that by looking and seeing how water is normally, because it'll create obvious telltale signs with the land of how water drains in that area. And you should be able to find a spot that's drier or driest in the area.
No, 100%. So a little story from Nomad here. Once rented a campsite and it was at the base of a hill, which we just said is a bad idea, and woke up to a stream under the tent. Good thing they were on air mattresses. And this is actually, this happens fairly often. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And that's the thing. You kind of got to get out of those lower lying areas, because you are going to wake up with water underneath you. Okay, so slightly jumping back on topic. I mean, not that we're super off topic, but a little more towards the truth of the topic here, sizing a shelter for the task. So talking about sizing a shelter for what we want to do it with. We talked about actually where we're going to go, what we're going to take in it. We talked about ventilation there briefly, but it also comes into, you got to consider whatever kind of shelter you're going to have the adequate ventilation, not only for, you know, moisture and stuff expelling, but to let fresh air in as well. You know what I mean? You don't want something that's completely airtight. You'll eventually, you know, it's not going to work out great for you, especially if you're going to be using some sort of combustion device in a tent, which we already said is not the best idea. But I would be a liar if I said I haven't used my UCO candle inside my tent. You know what I mean? So that there still burns up a little bit of oxygen and stuff like that. So you do need a little bit of ventilation. Ventilation goes hand in hand, and the best time to bring this into here now is heat retention or heat exhaustion. You know what I mean? When are you going to be using the shelter? Is this a semi-permanent shelter that you're going to build? Because then you got a little bit more freedom to you. You know what I mean? You can build a little larger shelter, keeping a heat source in mind. I'm thinking like wiki ups and stuff like that. You know what I mean? You can kind of build the shelter around the heat source, get that inside, and it's going to alleviate a lot of the things we just talked about. But you're still going to need a little bit of ventilation so that that smoke and stuff isn't going to settle inside your shelter and give you carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide poisoning, you know what I mean? So ventilation becomes a very key thing there, regardless if you're going to build a shelter or whatnot. Now, the caveat to that is the smaller the shelter, you would think the less ventilation you need, but keep in mind that area also fills up much faster with all the bad stuff too. So if there is a little carbon monoxide coming off your fire, if you are ever using candle, or if you are doing something like that, keep in mind there's not as much oxygen in that small area. So the ventilation is kind of relative to the size. You know what I mean? You still need adequate ventilation for any kind of shelter you're going to be building there. And I've repeated it numerous times now because it's probably important.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there's a rule of thumb how much ventilation you need per person or per appliance. Because appliances, you know, like you said, the UCL lantern, a small fire, a stove, all this stuff is burning oxygen and producing an exhaust. But obviously, you would want enough that there's enough fresh air coming in to supply everything that's consuming oxygen, and enough output to get rid of that air. So you really do want to be able to refresh the air in that shelter, you know, probably a few times an hour or a minute, depending on the need, right?
There is a number per person. The average person requires at least 8 liters a minute of fresh oxygen for ventilation.
There. So 8 liters per minute per person. And that goes up if you're running a flame device.
Oh, for sure. That is just per
Per
average
person.
person.
Right? If you happen to be working up a sweat while you're in there, that's going to go up a little higher. Right? If you're asleep, maybe a little bit less.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, so ventilation, you definitely have to keep that in there. 8 liters a minute. 2 liter pop bottle. You need four of those a minute. Granted, air moves pretty freely. It's pretty easy to move that kind of air. But if we're talking like pinholes, all of a sudden it's not so easy to run that 8 liters of air. But once again, that's exponentially. The bigger your opening is, the more air is going to come in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we did say it the other week, and I think we can bring that up. If you do have a condensation problem, one solution is to find a way to move the air inside. So small fans, if you get like a little battery-powered fan, and you can blow it up along the side and get that air moving, so it's not just settling somewhere, you will evaporate some of that condensation back off and be able to displace it. But good vent up top, good vent down below, and allow that some of the hot air to rise and leave, and the new fresh cooler air coming in. The cooler air from outside is drier, and that will help fix the ventilation. And you can that same method is used in houses. There's a no power system you can get. It's just a set of pipes where you have cool air from the basement gets circulated through, and it accepts fresh air from outside. And the way it moves, it actually will help dehumidify a house. So it's that's the concept. Just figure how you're going to run it, right?
Science.
Science.
Steve, a decent little entryway. Can't remember the actual term. Super nice for a storage area, cooking place. I assume he means like an awning outing or like
No.
a porch area.
Yeah, but there's a name, a vestibule.
Vestibule. Thank you.
Vestibule. So yeah, and a lot of good tents, especially higher end ones, you will find that when you put your dome or your outer covering on over your inner part, it'll cover a porch. You'll have that area, and oftentimes that's big enough for your shoes, maybe a small pack, and that means you don't have to sleep with that stuff in the sleeping area, but it is in out of the rain, the snow, the weather. And it's accessible without having to go outside.
And I was going to say, that brings another important point. Dragging your gear in, if it had been damp outside, if it's gotten a little bit wet, like even dampness, and you're bringing that into your shelter, that's going to add to the humidity problem. When you put your rain fly on, something that was just lingering in the back of my head, and I'm just remember now, is for the love of goodness, use your guy lines. It's usually the first thing people sacrifice on little tents. Like, oh, I don't really need them. The rain fly is going to be fine. It's not going to rain tonight. You know what I mean? As it drapes over your tent, you are sealing off that airflow. Guy lines are a must. So anyway, back to heat and ventilation. So if you are going to be going in colder weather, a smaller shelter is not such a bad idea because it's less room that you need to potentially heat up. We already talked about you're just using radiant heat anyway. You're not really conserving this heat inside. If you were able to insulate this, or if you have an insulated tent, and they do make these to some degree, you can go a little bigger and still be fairly effective with a heating source. But for the average tent or hot tent or whatever you're going to be using here, most of that heat's bleeding directly out. So you're losing that as radiant heat. So if you can keep that smaller, you don't have to heat all that area up around you just to bleed off anyway.
True. Think of, and I agree 100%. But in a hot tent, your stove takes up close to one person's worth of space.
Oh, I'm not saying go tiny. I'm just saying perhaps not go bigger than what you need.
So, and exactly, I have, what is it, call it, I'm trying to remember the name of mine, Wild Haven, I think it might have been called. And across the base, I think this one at its widest might be just shy of 10 foot. We worked out though that basically the usable space inside is fairly close to 7.5 to 7.5 feet. And you put the screen tent in, that's kind of what it takes. And we kind of figured, like, working with it, that I can get, like, my family of five to sleep in if we had to. That being said, not with a stove. When I put a stove in and no screen tent, I find two people's almost crowded in that thing.
Yeah. No, 100%. And that kind of comes back to the original thing we said. Who's going to be using the tent? Is it just a single person? Is it multiple people? How often are they going to be going out together if it's multiple people? You know what I mean? There's tons of things to take into consideration for this, but yeah.
But I personally am looking, and I've looked it up quite a bit. I think I might have shared it with you a little while ago. At a bigger hot tent for if my family wanted to go in the shoulder season. And still use the stove. And that's one of the things I'm considering. How big do I need to go? And what, you know, how much, I guess the other thing is, how much do you want to spend?
Yeah. And that's the thing. There's a lot of good deals on hot tents online. But for a good hot tent of any size, you're looking at bigger money.
Yeah. And as you get up in quality, it doesn't necessarily get lighter or better. Like, sometimes it's just thicker, heavier material. It's built to last longer in rougher conditions. You have to really size up when you're buying a tent or whatever you're going to make your shelter from. You have to consider a lot of things. How heavy it is, how durable it is, how long you're hoping to get out of it. What are you doing in it? These are all definitely things. If you want a tent that you can go in the woods, set up, and leave for 6 months at a time, the thicker, heavier canvas ones make a lot of sense. You know, the slightly lighter nylon ones are really good. Don't get me wrong. I love them. But I wouldn't trust to leave it for 4 or 5 days by itself.
No. No, and I'm with you on that. I've gone to areas where people have left tents, the waterfalls. Where I've taken you, one of the people that I know, they set a tent up there and they were just going to leave it for the month. Left for a week, came back to it basically shredded. You know what I mean? Just the wind had picked up a little bit. It was a lighter tent. Limbs blew into it, just shredded it all to heck on them.
Yeah. You kind of need to be there and maintain and protect it to a certain degree. Like, it will protect you, but it needs a bit more work. The thicker, heavier ones have that advantage. Yeah. Plus, like, even the straps, like, you can only put it so tight, and with the wind moving it around, you're going to have to readjust those. And if you let them get too loose, the wind stops sliding over it and starts grabbing it. So as it gets looser and looser, it becomes more and more a parachute and can start pulling itself apart.
So I'm just trying to think what else we should talk about on this subject. I mean, it was just kind of a quick little niblet, but what else you got, Ben?
Well, I think we can talk a little bit about a shape, because you have your teepee style.
Yes.
Which is like a center pole. You realize that your footprint, because a lot of people might look at it, oh, I'm going to get this because it has the footprint. The problem with a teepee style is your height is only in the center. As you get closer and closer to the edge, it becomes less and less usable.
So which really, is what my style of hot tent or my poncho tent is. It's TP style. In the center, not bad. But as you get out, I mean, I think at the bottom, there's one section there where there's like 4 inches of usable room. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's not really usable room at that point.
Well, in my hot tent's the same thing. And in fact, what I do is I take my gear, because I can get that fairly flat and low, and I put that as far under the edge as I can, and then I sleep on this side, and that means when the air comes in, it hits my gear and kind of goes over the top of me and allows me to have ventilation without getting cold, so that any ventilation that comes in doesn't hit me directly and start stealing heat. It has to go over something or around something to get to me, and that's because there is no bathtub to those. It's only a step up from being basically a tarp.
Well, it basically is a fancy tarp. That seals.
Right. You have your A-frame.
Yep.
And that's, you know, the same height from one end to the next, but again, slightly slope sides. And oftentimes you get like what I would call a knee wall. So there's a section of it that may be like a foot high. all the way around. So you get all your floor space up to a foot, and then it just gets higher at the center. What's even more popular, and this I think is some of the best use of space, is a dome tent.
Yeah. And domes are one of my tents is a dome tent. It's the one I've had the longest, and it actually has the best usable space for size of tent inside.
Those, the sides start pretty steep and they curve in as they get close to the top, and you have a fairly consistent amount of usable space. You can usually stand up in those for quite a ways. The cabin style might be slightly better, but isn't nearly as stable in the wind. Because that does have probably 6 foot sides and then a regular roof like a house. And when you see that, you're like, oh, wow, that's really cool. It's very roomy. You know you have flat sides and wind just buckles those in. And
Yes.
so you're going to need a lot more straps. They're usually a lot heavier as a result. And that is my biggest tent. And I've used it and it's decent in the wind, actually, surprisingly so. But yeah, you have to set it up right. The poles are much stronger, much bigger. Something to be considered.
And on that note, Steve has quality of poles, consider replacing guy lines, resealing seams, just a few last minute thoughts for sealing stuff off. And that's not a bad thing to talk about too, is maintenance. That's a good thing to
Yes.
consider when you're talking about the size of a shelter, because the bigger a shelter, the more maintenance is going to be involved on it. The same maintenance, just over a larger area, I guess. But still, that is a real consideration for people. They may be able to take like 30 minutes to get their tent ready, but they may not be able to take 3 hours. You know what I mean? Like my new family tent, I set that up in the yard and I went to rewater, or not re-waterproof it, but I always put like initial good coating of waterproofing on everything, right? One, it didn't take one can of waterproofing like my other tent did. It took four cans. And it took a lot longer to dry. You know what I mean? Because it was bigger and certain parts had to be removed to waterproof and you had to stretch them out. Like there was a lot more to it than my little dome tent, where basically just set it up, hammer the stuff to it, 3 hours later it's dry, you can pack it back up.
Yeah, so maintenance, a few things to keep in mind. Yeah, you can waterproof it 100%. The more time your tent spends in the sun, the quicker it's going to deteriorate.
UV, yep.
It is better off to set your tent up in the evening and before you need it, and then take it down as soon as you're finished with it. So if you're going for 3 or 4 nights, don't leave it up 4 or 5 days after your trip type deal. Like if in your yard, you only should have a tent set up when you need it. That's not to say that if you're there for a few days, you can't leave it up while you're there, but leaving it up extra days is just exposing it to both weather and sun that you don't need it to. Setting your setup tight up properly, so not too tight, not too loose, so it's not getting undue strain. And whenever you take it down, make sure it's thoroughly dry before you put it away.
Yeah, because even synthetic materials, the water inside rots and it'll slowly spread out into the synthetic material and deteriorate it.
And the threads are oftentimes a weak point in a lot of those. So sometimes the threads themselves will rot out, and so you'll have relatively good panels, but the seams fail because the threads and stuff rotted out. It's, they use a nylon wall, but a cotton thread, it's an issue.
100%. And don't think this is exclusive to synthetic tents and stuff like that too. Any shelter you're going to be building out there in the woods, UV does a big damage to a lot of stuff. Just straight wood, UV will damage it. Like you put a piece of raw wood outside, eventually it's going to dry and it's going to gray. The graying, a lot of people like this look, but it's UV damage to a certain point, you know what I mean? And over extended time, it will damage it. That's why most time when things gray, they're either sealed or it's not direct sunlight, you know what I mean? It's not breaking down as much as if it's being hit with direct sunlight. And that's going to be more upkeep even for natural shelters. You're going to have to be maybe mending and attending the outer walls on this thing.
So, be it canvas, nylon, polyester, any of these types of materials, oftentimes the waterproofing you can put in will come with, and I can picture it in my head now because I've had a couple of them, it'll say UV protectant. So it's like a sunscreen for your camping equipment. And I have like SUPs, and they're in these big nylon bags, and they're you can see where they've sat in the sun. You can see it paling out, and eventually, if you leave it there long enough, you'll be able to push your finger right through that material.
Oh, easy. I have an old tent, one of my original tents. It's been through hell and back, honestly. And you can see the faded panels where the sun has hit it more often. You know what I mean? Like the rain fly is a significantly lighter color than the canvas underneath.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So a couple comments here. First of all, Bob Billy joining us. I think that's the first time I've seen his name in the comments. So welcome to the show. I always carry ABS tent stakes in case I need to make shavings for an extended fire starter. And once again, that kind of goes into your shelter. There's the materials you're going to be using it for too. A lot of cheaper ones, well, not cheaper ones, a lot, or the most common stake is going to be an aluminum stake. But those ABS ones, they're not a bad idea to replace too, because they're generally a little tougher to jam into the ground, and they double down as you can use them for other things. Downside is generally they may be a little larger, but once again, depending on where you're going, how you're getting there, may not be an issue. And John Doe joining us here. I have a system for making a 10 by 15 freestanding bushcraft shelter with a simple camo tarps. I use a propane indoor heater, 7 feet high with upper and lower vents. This is good for longer trips. And that's just
Yeah.
it. You can use the tarps, get your ventilation going, get a heat source in there, and it's pretty nice. Like Ben and I, we originally had planned to make a shelter out of cling wrap or saran wrap or pallet wrap or whatever you want to call the stuff.
Alan Grab, yeah.
So. And it would have worked great if we had actually got to do it.
Sorry.
Yeah. I know, I know. Family moving out west, leaving old Roberto.
Yeah, no, I mean, these are all great things, and it just, consider what you want to do. Make sure you're setting yourself up at ample room to do what you want without so much extra room that you're starting to carry extra weight, extra burden, harder to heat or cool. And keep those things in mind. Make sure that the materials you choose are adequate for the environment. One thing we didn't talk about, and we can quickly mention it, if you're setting up on rough terrain, that's hard on a tent. Like, I have set up a tent one time on granite, and it did a number on the floor.
Yeah, no, 100% shale. I set up in a gravel pit once, high school days, everybody goes out and has fun, and it literally shredded the bottom of my tent.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the ground tarps come in can really make the difference. And if I was to set up, if I knew I was going to be regularly setting up on something so rough, I might even consider taking like a wool blanket and putting underneath and setting up on top of that so that I had that natural cushion and comfort. Because when you crawl over, you can feel those things, and it's digging to you, and there's something between you and it. It's taking the pounding, right?
Yep.
So some kind of insulating layer can be useful there. That's something to just consider. But I think we covered the majority of the topic we wanted to cover.
I do believe so. I think it was a good chat. Hopefully, like most of our topics here, it gets the creative juices flowing for people to consider things outside the box. You know what I mean? Or to peel the blinders back a little bit, not focus in on the one thing. What is the best tent I can buy? Well, there's no best tent. There's going to be things that fit the situation you're in, and here's some of the things you have to consider while you're that you may want to consider for the situations, I guess.
And like you said, take the person rating, because that's unfortunately how tents are generally rated. Take that with a grain of salt at best, and really like think about your floor plan. How much room am I going to take up? How much room do I need for my sleeping system? How much do I need for my stove if I'm running a stove in it? Whatever I'm planning on doing, and what obstructions are there? So if you have a tent where there's internal poles, that's taking up space. That's going to be there, right? Yeah, those are things to really keep in mind. There's so much more we can talk about tents. We could talk about trekking pole tents. We could talk about not taking poles at all and cutting them in the woods. But these are other topics that we could get in. But in the end, I think the important thing is, I just got a text saying that my online banking is shut down on a phone that does not have access to my online banking.
Oh, quality troll right there.
But yeah, take into consideration what you're doing. Think about it. If in doubt, mark off an area on a floor and set up approximately what you think you're going to need. I've often done that. Laid all my stuff out, like lay your air mattress down, lay your sleeping bag down, come up with a floor space, and then think about the structure and make sure that this, you know, if you're in a teepee tent, that those low side walls aren't going to be too much for you. My go ahead is usually think about what you want and add about 25 to 30% more is how I think about it, but figure out what works for you.
Exactly. And like John, like Steve said here in the comments, for instance, where's it at? Just something on size. Two person is two people with all limbs against body, no storage, no stretching, and generally it's head to feet. You know what I mean? Like, two person means it is two people can crawl in there and sleep with nothing else, and hopefully they don't move. So, yeah, if you're buying a three person tent for you, your significant other, and your child, yeah, I bet you it's going to be pretty tight.
Yeah. No, it definitely is, right?
And they don't account for air mattresses or anything under you either, sleeping pads. This is literally like on the bottom of these tents.
Keep well, I've seen a one-person tent you could not put an air mattress in.
Oh, yeah. I have a tent you can't put an air mattress in. I can barely get my sleeping pad in it.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
In any case. Yeah, I think that's it for me for tonight. Good spot as any to end there. Once again, we are finally starting to get a few names for the digital campfire, Ben. We have John Doe that's on board. We got Nomad that's on board. You and I. Still trying to talk Danny into it. I think we're getting all the makings of this potentially happening for once.
Yeah, awesome.
But yeah, that's another thing, another time. I think for tonight, I'm going to say what I normally say. Get out there, get dirty, but play safe. And if you have some fun adventures, let us know about it. We'd love to hear from it. Maybe get you on the show and we'll chat about it. Night, everybody.
Have fun.